Greetings. I am Shisada Akona Kamada, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Well, good evening, everyone. This is Shisada Akona Kamada, and you are listening to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. I'm here tonight with PLEN and Linda, and we're going to go ahead and get started. So take a nice, deep, cleansing breath. Get comfortable. Call your God self forward. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the Great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I now call forth a shaft of pure Christ light to surround each one of us. And I ask that these shafts of light be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround these tubes of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. I place myself in service, as does PLEN, to all of you listening. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. Because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Ask you to stay in this space for just a minute. As you know, we just had that beautiful total eclipse of the full moon. There's been a lot of shifting, a lot of really strong energies moving through in the last week that will continue a little longer. So what we're going to do is just a very brief thing that is a lovely thing to do anytime you want to kind of just release any denser energies that have accumulated in the physical form. All you need to do, very simple, take a nice deep breath through your nose, and then you're going to actually expel it out through your mouth, like very rapidly and all the way out. Okay, so it's a really deep breath and then whew, blow it out. Okay, so let's do that together three times and then listen for the little singing bowl again. Okay, so nice deep breath. Good. Do it again. Okay, one more. As strong as you can. Oh, good. Another nice deep breath in. Focus on your heart. Bring that vibration up as strong as you can do it. All in your heart. Remember, your heart energy expands out in all directions. Push it out. Go, 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 go. All right. You know, the heart energy of a master can extend for miles and miles and miles and miles. An avatar's energy can extend through an entire planet. You have more impact than you're aware of. All right, very good. So, lovely. Thank you for joining us tonight. PLN. What on earth are we going to talk about this evening?
Well, you know what's coming to me is your two recent blogs.
Yes.
The one was Spiritual Sunburn, mm-hmm. and the other, I forget what it was called, but it was more about that we have to, you know, do the work. We have to. So, just if there's any confusion for anyone, mm-hmm. One is saying kind of take it slow, and the other is saying forge ahead.
The paradox.
Yes.
Yeah. So what's your question?
I don't have a question, but but I'm just wondering, like, if anyone may possibly find that confusing, like, how do we forge ahead but take it slow?
Okay. So first off, for any of you who aren't aware of any kind of blog that I do, I actually do a weekly blog on our website, which is theshambhalacenter.org. And then we also post a link to it on our Facebook page every week, which is, facebook.com, the Shambhala Center, Shambhala with an H. So the one about, see, now here's the downside to being in the present moment is you have like no memory retention whatsoever. So you're going to have to remind me. I have a vague recollection, as you just said, that there must have been something about initiation in one of those blogs. If you're talking about take it slow, because that sounds like something I would have been talking. I may not have spoken about initiation directly.
Oh, yeah, yes, you did.
Mm-hmm. I did. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that would have been concerning. Okay. Yes. That just jogged something. Okay. So, the problem that many seekers, unknowingly and very innocently walk into is that coming into their spiritual work, they, especially in the very beginning, when they just start and they see some real positive movement and the momentum gets going, on one level, from a very innocent place, they kind of are like, oh, this is like awesome. Just like throw it at me, right? Beyond that, also someone who will end up saying, bring it on, is coming from kind of a different place. It's still rather innocent, but it's from a very cocky place, right? And that's for the seeker who has been doing their work and who has moved into deeper levels of awareness, who have had some really beautiful experiences. And coming out of that, unfortunately, it's very easy for the mind to kind of latch on to the success of it. And then for the seeker to kind of almost tempt, use the terminology tempt fate, right? By saying, you know, oh, this was great. You know, like I did a great job, and they may even experience that it was easy, whatever. And then they're kind of like, bring it on. And so my point in that writing was to give people a heads up that is not something that you want to be doing. The reason being that if you ask for it, you're going to get it. And when it comes to your spiritual work, you don't want more thrown at you at one time than you need to experience. People just do not and cannot have the understanding of that until they have experienced what it is to have something thrown at you that you are going to have to walk through, okay? Because most people, when they get involved on a conscious spiritual path, they are running under so many different assumptions, okay? Things that have been kind of planted in their mind from other things they've read, things they've seen videos on, other people's experiences. So that there's this whole conglomeration of what you think it is to be a seeker, what you think it is to do spiritual work, what you think this looks like and that looks like. And you see, so it's already created this entire matrix for you, which may not be remotely accurate. The part where people really get hit hard is that the New Age community, especially, right, our love and light friends, get slammed when they, people who are really heavily involved in that work end up coming to someone like me to do work. The reason that they get slammed is because they're so invested in everything's love and light and, you know, being in this beautiful space that they have no concept whatsoever that in order to move forward in their evolution to the point of illumination, it means they actually are going to have to wade through the darkest of the dark that they have been repressing and denying for all these years. So people who have been by and large, kind of living in that New Age place, are not prepared for what is going to come their way. Okay. And that's why we lose a lot of them, because it gets too scary. Yeah. And that's okay. And now I'm going to say this again, because I have to, because if I don't, someone's going to get the wrong idea. I always have to kind of explain myself. When I say this, I am not bashing the New Age movement. Please do not misunderstand me, okay? Because I myself have found a lot of value in a lot of the things that have come through the New Age movement. And this is actually kind of good, because when we were just sitting in physical satsang earlier, I spoke to this, not about the New Age movement, but about how the positive states of mind that you experience, and they're all the things that you would associate with the New Age movement, right? Love and peace and joy and, you know, all of this stuff. Those states of mind are your divine nature. They are the essence of you, okay? The downside is that here in this paradigm, those states of mind, okay, were born out of the negative states of mind, all right? So mind, consciousness fell because of the initial identification with the personal self, okay, with I. And in that moment, when all the states of mind came into being, the negative ones came first, okay? You have to, this is a very deep teaching and something that, you know, write it down if this is the first time you're hearing me say it, because it's really important. The negative states of mind came into being prior to the positive states. So negative states of mind. Now, for a lot of people, you don't know what a state of mind is. So I tell people initially, you can kind of think of it like a feeling. All right. Anger is a feeling, but anger can be a composite of multiple states of mind. Right. So, but you could think of anger as a state of mind, and that's fine. Right. That's would be a negative state of mind. Okay. Confusion would be considered a negative state of mind for most people. Right. Abandonment would be a negative state of mind. So all the negative states came in. And then at that point, you have a now identified consciousness, which is at this point polarized, that wants to swing out of that horrendous, emotionally painful state that it's sitting in its experience of what separation is. All right. So you have an experience where consciousness went from being, you know, the creator, being the light, being energy itself, awareness itself, all right, into a state where it feels cut off from that. And in that moment, all of these states of mind came in, and it moved into a state of pain. Now, what it then did was automatically move to a space where it could create a sense of non-pain. See what I'm saying? Pain trumps everything. So what it was trying to do was to create the space of anything that wasn't that. And then that's where the positive states of mind were born. The states of hope, and which, you know, actually isn't a positive state of mind, but people think of it that way. So the hope came. And then you have, you know, expectation, which people experienced as a positive thing, right? And then the expectation of joy and peace and love and all of these things. And so as all of that came in, now what you had was the lower mind itself experiencing this circle where it goes into pain, and then it moves itself to a place where it feels the opposite. However it can get there, it doesn't care how it gets there. It'll do whatever it takes, okay? Whatever it takes, it'll do it to swing itself out. So the swing can come, it comes as some form of action, right? It can be physical action, like getting up and leaving a room. It could be something like going to your freezer and grabbing a pint of ice cream, right? To kind of dull out. It could be turning on the TV. It could be screaming at someone, all right? Because in the moment when you scream at someone, even though you're still experiencing the sense of being angry, it swings you out of the place where you felt victimized in your anger. And in that moment, there's a self-righteousness that sits there because it says that I was justified in screaming. I may think that screaming's wrong, but I'll feel justified in doing it because you pushed me to it, right? So in that space, even though we don't see joy and peace, right, it swung out of the deep, deep pain. You understand? Now it'll keep cycling. So in that particular instance, just so people don't get confused, just because you swing out doesn't mean you go all the way up the spiral of positive states of mind. You could swing right back over immediately into the negative states. Okay. And this is where mind gets trapped in a ping pong match of polarization. It'll bounce back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Okay. It'll get locked down there because it's in deep pain. And so it reacts from a place where it'll swing itself out, but it can't last long because it's too identified with the pain. Right? Right. So the initial screaming maybe kind of gave you a subtle sense of, oh, there, you know. But then it'll only take a minute. The person only has to say one more thing to you, right? And then it's met with another round of screaming. Or maybe it amplifies, right? And now maybe you go to slamming doors or you go to storming off, right? That's another thing that people would use to swing out, to remove themselves in a way where they're making a real statement, right? Okay. So where was I going with this? It had something to do with initiation. So anyway, let's see if I can get there eventually. It's really the funniest thing because the way spirit works for me, it doesn't make a bit of sense. But I always get there at some point. It'll come around on itself. Bear with me. So, okay. So for the average light worker out there, when they come into our space, right, what they believe to be true is not inaccurate. You know, love, peace, joy, happiness, all of these things. Actually, they're your divine nature. That's what you are. But that's not what you feel. See? It's your beingness. Yeah? And that's the difference. So what we were saying earlier in satsang was that it's this very tricky, paradoxical place that we get stuck as a seeker, because sometimes your experience of, oftentimes your experience of love is anything but love, right? It's an identified experience and you're just sitting in the positive states of mind. It's not true love. Right? Love is your beingness. Understand? And so when you are in a moment of true love, it doesn't necessarily appear to you in a way that you would call it love. It's an energy, right? And it doesn't have a name. It just is, right? Okay. But when you find yourself, you know, oh, I'm so excited, blah, 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 right? That's not your divine excitement level, your beingness, because that's not over, you know, that's not, that's not that. That's polarized excitement. It's there to offset whatever the opposite side of it is that you don't really want to look at, right? So this is the challenge. The challenge is, you know, oh, at some point you have to be ready to move into the level that goes, oh, so I actually do need to recognize that there is darkness in the world, and me pushing it away is not going to make it any better, right? And that, of course, is what's required. Now, any Buddhist will tell you that, right? the whole middle path is about that. It's not about saying evil doesn't exist, darkness doesn't exist, negativity doesn't exist, because it does in this paradigm. It has to, right? Equivalent to the light, equivalent to the positive. The point is to see through the whole game and to walk the middle path. Yeah. And that's the difficult thing, because the problem is people get very invested in, I mean, humanity as a whole is invested in all the things we believe we're supposed to be. We're invested in actually things that come out of the divine, but that we've polarized over. We're invested in our morality. That's divine, but not the way we live it. The way we live it is polarized. We're invested in functioning from our conscience, right? Your conscience is divine, but not the way you live from it, because it's polarized. You understand? So both are there simultaneously. If you can live in a space in your conscience where you pay attention, and when you hear it, you function from it, and you're capable of doing it without withholding your love from someone and without using it as a reason to pass judgment, now you're experiencing your divine self. But what people do is they take conscience, they take morality, right? And they use it as almost a weapon. They use it as a way to make other people wrong. Yeah? And is that divine morality? Well, of course not, right? I love to use, well, I love to bash Republicans, can't help it. So the far right wing, I just always used to get a kick out of this, because it would be, you know, the whole, they are the true, you know, party of the Bible, right? The far right wing Christians. Yeah. And I always got the biggest kick out of the hypocrisy that they just can't see, because they pride themselves, right? Pride not being a divine part of your nature. They pride themselves on being, you know, God-fearing Christians, right? And then they'll turn around and put all kinds of money up toward our military expenditures. And they're always the first ones to say, let's go to war. And in the same breath, they're going to call themselves a Christian. And I look at that and I go, well, isn't that interesting? You consider yourself a Christian, but it was Christ himself who said, turn the other cheek, right? Do not judge, lest ye be judged. There's something very hypocritical going on here. What is that? Now, the Old Testament says an eye for an eye. Christ never said that. Christ has nothing to do with the Old Testament, does he? Right? The teachings of Christ are in the New Testament. So this is what's happening everywhere. You know, okay, nothing against Republicans, so don't get me wrong there either. I have to use anything I can get my hands on to show you and to illustrate, you know, a higher and deeper teaching. I got no problem with Republicans. Okay. So this is the challenge, right? And within that, here's the thing. You're going to have to, because you are identified, because you carry a karmic load for however many lifetimes you've been running in circles in this paradigm, you have to neutralize that karma before you can move on and leave this dynamic altogether, right? Return to your natural state. And there's only one way through that. You know, there's only one way through it. You've got to walk through it. And so we go back to that, what Psalm is it, 23, right? You know, walking through the shadow of the valley of death. That's exactly what they're pointing to. You got to walk through it with the faith and the trust that what you're walking toward, you know, there's this end point that is God. And on top of it, God's with you the whole time, because God's the one walking through it, realistically, right? Remember, just because you don't remember yourself as God does not mean that you aren't God. You are God. Everything is God. I came up with a mantra this past week and sent it to our core council members. And the mantra that I asked them all to meditate on and then to speak in their daily lives, I will give to you and tell you to do the same. To do this in contemplation, but beyond that, to do this at any moment during the day, because it holds the same truth either way. And the mantra is, all God, all here, all now, no separation. very, very deep and profound truth. And you can look anywhere you happen to be and speak those words, and they are equally true. Wherever you are, you could be half dissolved in meditation, and they are true. And you could be in the deepest despair, and they're equally true. So this is the crux of the problem on the planet, is that collectively we hold a psyche that simultaneously wants illumination and reunion with the divine, which is how they experience it. In the same breath, they also don't want to look at their crap, right? They don't want to look at anything that isn't pretty. And there's a problem there. Those two things don't go together, do they? If you're not willing to do one, why would you think you're going to get the other? Right? If the reason that you have all this built up stuff is because you've been repressing it, right? Or because you've been pushing away on it and pushing it into the furthest recesses of the unconscious, you're just going to continue to cycle here until you're willing to go in and start looking at it, right? And the only reason that you don't look at it is because you're afraid to, right? The fear sits there because it reminds you of the pain you experienced when you first had the experience of it and then decided to push it away. It hurt. That's why you did it, right? Because you identified with the emotional pain that you felt in that moment. And something in the psyche said, oh, well, let's fix that. I don't want to feel that again. Push it away, right? Okay, so that's fine. That's not a bad thing. It's called a coping mechanism. Okay. And if it happened when you were a child, you know what? You did what you needed to do, and there is nothing wrong with that. And it may have saved your life. But the thing is that most seekers really come into their own in their, you know, later 20s and sometimes even far later than that. At that point, it's not working for you anymore. You're an adult now, and you're an adult functioning from the mentality of a small child, right? That had this painful experience and didn't have a full understanding of what was actually going on, didn't have deeper understanding, certainly, that the reason that it ended up experiencing that pain was because, you know, polarized consciousness was imprinting itself on the child. And so it did what it needed to do. But as an adult, it's hurting you. It's not helping you. It's keeping you from experiencing your nature, which is your heart. It keeps you walled off from everyone around you that you want to love and that you naturally do love, right? That's why it's so painful. It's painful because in the moment, what you're experiencing is the absence of what you are. That's what's painful. It's not that you experience the pain. The pain is your experience of not experiencing the love. You see? It's a little different way to look at it, yeah? That's what all people want to see it in the opposite. And what they can't see is it's only because in the moment, you aren't experiencing who you are, right? That part has gotten kind of cut off. Well, you cut it off. So your issue is not with the other person, it's with yourself for cutting it off, right? Because we take everything personally. And now you did this to me, and it hurt. And now I'm going to hold on to that, and I'm going to judge you for it, and I'm going to blame you for it. And now I just created this wall between you and me, and that's just going to have to sit there, right? And I'll tell you I love you, and I'll try to believe that I love you, right? But the fact is, I'm not treating you like I love you. I just put a wall between us. Is that love, right? And then the pain still sits there because, in highest truth, we really do love them. We really do love them. That's what hurts the most. That we love them. But we built a wall so we wouldn't experience our own love. And it doesn't need to be that way. But the only way you get there is to walk through it, right? To walk through it. And then it's to go back to the whole thing around initiation, not to rush it. This is a step-by-step path, okay? And so anyone who gets involved thinking that, okay, so this will be good, you know, like I sit in meditation and I go up to these very lofty places and, you know, everything's great from there on, they're in for a very rude awakening. And so then they're kind of like, well, just, you know, bring it to me, because they're so eager for the end result, whatever their expectation of that is. Remember, like everyone, like you tell them, you're on the path to enlightenment. That means something to people, whatever it is. The best people for this work are people who have no spiritual understandings whatsoever. Because you got nothing to fight. There's nothing to fight. But people who are raised in religion and then do their own studying and all that, I mean, there's a lot that comes up that you have to fight against, because now they have a spiritual truth in place, and now they're going to be presented with the opposite, and they hang on to it so tight that, you know, that could be enough to for them to walk away altogether. If it came too fast from a physical perspective, okay, if you were sitting wherever you are right now with your level of understanding, and in a moment you had full-on illumination, chances are it would kill you. From a vibratory level alone, your nervous system could not handle it, and it would fry you from the inside. That is the truth. Right? That is the truth. So, don't ask for more than a step at a time. Don't be greedy. You know, I trust that the work is going to come. It's going to present itself to you in the world. Whatever it is that needs to come next, it's just going to come. You don't have to ask for it. Right? You get past this challenge, right? You do the work, you function from your level of understanding. And if you function and you're clear, then it's time to move to the next thing. If you fall short, that's fine. It'll bring it again. No big deal. No need to judge yourself. Just, it is what it is. Right? But you have people who, you know, if they're in any kind of situation where they know that like initiations are being given, they're like, fill out the thing for, I want the biggest one, you know? And what I have said to people is when you kind of put it out there and you're like, you know, kind of internally to the masters, you're like, bring it on, because I can handle it. They will. And those people are the ones who literally will watch their lives fall apart. Because maybe the next step for you karmically was, you know, maybe you were going to have a challenge with your spouse. Maybe it was time for that. The two of you have karma together, blah, blah, blah. And it's time for that to really come full circle and for you to have to walk through that piece. That would be difficult enough, right? You get all cocky and tell the masters to just keep throwing it at you. Oh, good. So that's great. So let's have, maybe you'll just lose your job at the same time, right? Maybe your house burns down. Maybe one of your kids gets really sick. Who knows what could happen? But this is what happens to people who get that way. And again, like I said, they're doing it from an innocent place, because you don't have the understanding of how spiritual work actually really does work. Because there aren't many people at all out there teaching seekers really what's going on and how it works here in this reality, right? And what you truly have to walk through. That's why I'm not filling stadiums of people to listen to my work. Who wants to show up and hear this? Right? Well, I did. As masochistic as it could seem, I wanted it more than anything. Right? Now I live in a world that is, you know, magical, absolutely magical, and had no concept that this could be life, you know, before I started my work. But boy, I had to wade through it to get to it. Okay. So you do want to take it slowly, meaning you're not running away from your work, right? But you're not all kind of like, I just want to get this over with as quick as possible. You know, I'm ready for enlightenment. I'm ready. Oh, you think so, do you? I mean, you're here to master life in polarization. That's not an easy task, right? That's not an easy task. The flip side of it was what? Telling people what?
Forge ahead.
Forge ahead. Yes.
Poke around. Look for it.
look for it. That's right. That's right. So, and they are in alignment, because in the same respect that I'm telling people, you know, kind of take it as it comes, there is a tendency. So you've got the people who want to rush headfirst into everything, right? And get their butt whooped. And then you've got people who want the same end result, but who are very complacent in going there. And it's, you know, just because of the fear. So they play with it more, right? They'll do the parts that feel good. Like if you get someone who's very, identified with more new age kind of stuff, they'll show up for meditations. They'll love being part of the meditations, right? And kind of getting the energy off that and everything. But can you get them to actually sit down and write to do their processing work? Oh, heavens no. And anything that they do produce is going to be minimal as far as what they're actually going to see, because they're too afraid. Now, they won't recognize that. They won't recognize that it's fear. Okay. And so this is not any kind of personal bash on anybody. Okay. This is the mind. Remember, as I talk about people, I'm not talking about people. I'm talking about the lower mind. It's singular, presenting in everyone, but it's singular. The lower mind is petrified to go in deep and look at itself. It's petrified because it's painful, and beyond that, it's ultimately petrified because it thinks it's going to be annihilated. You know, so when you stare death in the face, there aren't many people in the moment who just surrender to it. You know, that primal part of you puts up a fight. So the mind is primal. Yeah, that there's a reason we call it the primal imprint. It is that. So you have to, you know, as you do your work, you have successes, you have failures, and those aren't good words to use because they're very polarized, right? But understand that that's, you know, the only way I can kind of make you understand. There are times where you move through it beautifully. There are other times where you stumble through it. There are times where you fall flat on your face for months at a time. And I have to come and scrape you off the floor. But it's all good, because at the end of the day, you learned something, right? And so you walk into the next experience that much wiser, with that much more experience under your belt, right? And a deeper level of understanding, even if it was understanding of what didn't work, or if it was just needing to see again when you spiral, this is what happens. Maybe that was it, right? We all take it personally and beat ourselves up. It's not necessary. It's very detrimental, actually. You should never beat yourself up. So you have to reach a place where you start looking. You know, if you've been in doing deep work for a while and you've found a place that seems relatively peaceful and calm, start looking for stuff, because it's there. It's just very subtle. And this is another thing people don't understand. You know, in the beginning, like, it seems very obvious when things come up, especially in processing work, because once you understand the pattern that starts to run, I'm like, you can see it everywhere. And it's like, wow, it was like this really big thing. And so you come into these really profound understandings and you have the experience of them and you actualize them. And it's like, wow. And then, you know, remember, you're here to master polarized life. That means all levels of it. So the mind is an incredibly deep, complicated thing, right? And it's very, very subtle. So in the beginning, you're dealing with the stuff that's very obvious. And then the deeper you go, the more subtle it becomes, and the more subtle it becomes. So as you'll spend more time in what I would term, you know, a dissolved state, where you aren't living as a, you know, 24/7 worldly, identified being. Okay. So you're spending more time in a state where there isn't that level of identification and polarization going on. And a lot of people get stuck there because they coast there. And then at that point, they kind of feel like, I've kind of got this thing. you know. And then when something hits them, they can go into denial very easily. If something comes and it's challenging, you know, at that point, a lot of people will start taking their spiritual understandings, and they'll use those as something to kind of convince themselves that they're not really experiencing it to the level they really are experiencing it. Now remember, the mind is incredibly subtle. It will do anything. It is the master manipulator. It will do anything to keep from going where it doesn't want to go. Okay. The driving force in this whole thing is God. You as God, you know, or even if you think about it, if that's too lofty for you, think about it as the Christ itself. The Christ itself is working very hard, you know, all the time, because it's here all the time and it's constantly trying to get your attention, get its own attention, right? In that sense, because it's this aspect that seems to be sleeping and the world is always bringing it to you. Look here, you know, this piece hasn't been uncovered yet. Look over here. And so when we have had some success and we've gotten to a place where, you know, we feel like life is pretty good. You know, man, I was really struggling 6 months ago and now a lot has shifted and I feel good about things. That's a tricky place to be, because that's where a lot of people, they kind of hang it up. Yeah. And my point is, you know, if you want not just a sense of peace in the material world, but if you want to actualize yourself as God, what are you waiting for? Right? See, and the difference is in the first example, you had the person who is placing the challenge, you know, to throw more at me outside of itself. Right? So that person is holding themselves separate from the masters, separate from, you know, God itself that would bring the next challenge to them. See what I'm saying? They're in a very polarized place there. The difference in what I'm speaking about right now is that you from within are saying, okay, let's look for the next one. Let's look for the next one. Because now it's not about me experiencing my pain, right? It's about the observer witnessing another level of identification. It's not personal at all. So there comes a point where, what are you afraid to look at? It's none of it's personal. If none of it's personal, why would you be afraid to look at anything? Right? Now, here comes the tricky part. The tricky part is that there are students who will get to the point where they'll look at anything, right? But then acting on it is the kicker. Actually taking what they've seen and what they know in their conscience, what they know in their heart of hearts says, oh, okay, I've been complacent in this aspect of my life. I've been an enabler in this aspect of my life. I've been fearful of creating waves. I've been fearful of instituting change because of how people around me would react, or fearful because I'm afraid of what it might mean to me if I actually say what I know I need to say. Okay. That's a whole level of mastery that you all have to move into. You have to. You don't ascend out of here if you're afraid to stand your ground when you need to stand your ground. You know? If you look back at one of the books that I always, I am not a teacher to recommend books to people, but there are a handful that I do. One of them was written by a woman named Elizabeth Haish, and the name of the book is Initiation. And it's a beautiful book because it's her personal journey. That's why it's so powerful. Okay. So in the book, she goes in and actually moves into a space where she remembers her life in Egypt. Okay. So it's this whole beautiful story, but she's remembering the levels of initiation that she had to move through in the mystery school. Okay. As an initiate. And the last initiation was the initiation of cruel love. And, you know, it was beautiful for me. I actually just I was out of town for a couple of weeks. I brought that book with me, and I, at different points, picked it up and opened a section and kind of read. And as I went back looking through it, I actually was looking at what she had said about the levels of initiation that she moved through. And I could see in my own experience, all of them, I could see them. Oh my gosh. Like that was it. And when it came to cruel love, I saw that. Oh my gosh. That was where I had that one. And it was a big one. It was big, really big and really hard. And in her story, in that moment, she has to hold a space with her son that kind of goes against everything in her as a mother. But because she doesn't see him as her son anymore, right? She sees him as God. She sees him as equal with her, right? She knows, and of course, at this point, her son is still unawakened. She is an awakened individual. And in that moment, she knows that she's got to hold this space with him, regardless of what he's going to do with it, you know, because he's going to do one of two things, so that he's going to take it and do something positive for himself with it, or he's going to take it and use it as a reason to blame her, to, you know, create more distance, withhold his love, all of that human stuff, right? But because of her love for him, she holds that space that looks very cruel to the outside world. And that's why it's so difficult to do. Because they are people we love. We love them so dearly. But what we can see sometimes is that we have enabled behaviors and use that that concept that we love them as our justifier for doing something that was going against what we knew in our core needed to be done. Right? And that's part of your journey here. You don't escape that. You are absolutely responsible for one person, and it's you. That's it, ultimately, right? And you're responsible for showing up in the world in whatever way is for the highest good of everybody that you come in contact with. Sometimes that looks like you're the most loving, wonderful, amazing person, and sometimes it looks like you are this wretched, cruel, unloving, nasty individual. And usually, the people that will experience you that way are the people you're closest to, because from their human perspective, they can't understand what you're bringing to them. It's kind of like, you know, like parents who send their kids to military camp, right? Troublemaker kids, and they send them off to boot camp. That's cruel love, right? Because they're stuck in a mindset, they're stuck in a thing, and they need to get their butt kicked. You know, that big swift kick in the ass. It's going to show you there is something else. You aren't just this. You know, you can be something different. And for a lot of kids, they have to literally be completely ripped out of their current situation and thrown into something completely different for them to actually walk away from it with a higher understanding, right? And they don't walk away from it hating their parents. They hate their parents when they go in, but they don't walk away from it in the same space, because they actually came into a deeper understanding because they went through it. Now, is it easy for the parents to do that to their kids? Of course not. What parent wants to know their kid hates them? Right? When they love their children. But it's for the child's highest good. So, you know, what are you going to do? Like, just kowtow to your kid? Okay, honey, you just keep doing what you're doing because I love you. It's like, no. Give the kid the opportunity that they don't know enough to give themselves, right? Because you can. That's a deeper level of your work. We need to go? Okay. Okay, so tonight I have a new song for you for our meditation. It's very heart-centered, so you got kind of pummeled with a lot of very serious stuff tonight. And let's take this next 8 minutes or whatever and focus back on our heart. Lots of strong energies. This is the perfect time to bring yourself back to your heart every opportunity you have. Okay? Hold your focus there as much as you can. And until next week, my deepest, deepest love to all of you. I hope you have a wonderful week. Good night.
You are divine.